This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The term radical Islam is common in the press these days. It's associated with a form of separatism and violence. But there is another radical Islam with much deeper roots. It's found in the writings of medieval mystical poets whose work describes a kind of deep love in which all of creation comes together. Omid Safi has translated more than 200 of these poems from the original Arabic and Persian to illuminate the ways in which the Muslim tradition is rooted in love. Omid Safi is the director of the Duke Islamic Studies Center. His book is called Radical Love, Teachings from the Islamic Mystical Tradition, and he joins us now. Welcome back, Omid Safi.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be back with you.
Good to be here. Let's talk about this word radical, because I think it's a good starting place. It is a word that has come to mean extreme, mm-hmm. but at its root, it means root.
It does mean root. It means getting back to the heart of things. And the poets and the mystics and the sages that I worked on in this book are talking about getting back to the heart of the faith, to what it is that brings us closer to God. And they begin with a very bold and audacious claim, which is that what we mean by love is not just a feeling, it's not just a sentiment, that real love, radical love, is actually the unleashing of God onto this realm. That it's love that brings us here, that we are made in love, we're made through love, that love is what sustains us here, and that if we merge with this cosmic current of love, that we will flow back to God, back to our home.
We're familiar with some of these. I think many people are familiar with Rumi, Hafiz, Hafez, and some of the others who turn up. At the very least, you'll get a quotation now and then, on your Facebook page or something. So we know who they are. But tell us more about this tradition. Is it a tradition, and are they all clustered, or sort of how are they spread out throughout time?
You know, I made a point of actually going back to the Quran and to the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. Because actually, when you read Rumi, you find that he's got about 3,000 references to the Quran and the teachings of Muhammad. So these Muslim sages and mystics are precisely that, Muslims who are mystically inclined towards the love of God. So it was important for me to show that this is a tradition that goes right back to the very root, to the radical heart of the faith, and finds expression through all these Arabic and Persian, later on Turkish and Urdu and other sages throughout time.
It goes back to the root, but does it emerge at a time when some of these mystics and others think it's time to remind everybody that perhaps we've strayed from the root?
They do. And in some ways, it's actually precisely at the moment in which Muslims are becoming a very powerful empire. And a civilization that is ruling over most of the world at that time, a situation that many of us as Americans can perhaps identify with, that they're saying, you know what, we've conquered the world, but do we know who we truly are? Have you forgotten about love and tenderness? Do we know the mystery of what it means to be fully human? Right? And it's at that time precisely that these love teachings begin to become quite mainstream and popular.
Well, I know we've talked about Rumi, and maybe we can ask you to read a poem for us.
Yes, I would love
that
to.
That you've translated.
Yeah. So I'm going to start. This is a poem that's called You and I, and it's one of my favorite ones because we think about how often we have interpersonal tensions, whether it's as a lover and beloved, husband and wife, parents and children. It can be at a community level, or it can be between nations, between species. So he just talks about you and I, and you can interpret that as you will. He says, you and I have to live as if you and I never heard of a you and an I.
And that gets to, this is from Radical Love, Teachings from the Islamic Mystical Tradition, translated and edited by Omid Safi, my guest today. The idea of this separation, right, this from the you and the I, we can operate separately, but where we meet is in love, and that's where the distinction ends.
Absolutely. We are already interconnected. We're already interwoven. And these separations, these illusions of being a separate being from one another, from the natural world, and ultimately from God, this only brings pain. There is joy, there is ecstasy in discovering the fact that we're already connected with one another.
And that's one of the other great characteristics of this poetry, and I think it's something that people notice when they spend the time with it. When we're talking about these abstract concepts of a nothingness, a void, a place where everything comes together, which is inconceivable, yeah. But ultimately true, the mystics would tell us, they use the most palpable, powerful, ecstatic, sensuous,
yes.
sexual language they possibly can to bring us to that point.
Well, it's no wonder that the language of union, right? Sensual union. You can go to the Song of Songs, you can go to the Christian mystics, and you can come to Rumi and Attar and Hafez, that there is something about that language of not only becoming one, but actually discovering that we've been one all along. And when, as Rumi says, when we become one, we become that one.
And it's about identity. I mean, in that same moment, and we are. Yeah. And so we have this illusion of ourselves as separate, as distinct from one another, which leads to the separation. But the truth is, we don't have to get there. You're there.
Yeah.
You know, you are here, right? A little arrow of pointing at, you know, with
becoming,
your little spring and,
yeah.
and an arrow. You are here.
You are here, becoming who we've been all along.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you read another one for us?
Of course, I'd be happy to. So this one deals with the notion of how love can help us transcend this sense of separatedness. And this one is called Mingling. This one's also from Rumi. And it's from the Radical Love collection. He says, "Look, love mingles with lovers. See, spirit mingling with body. How long will you see life as this and that, good and bad? Look at how this and that are mingled. How long will you speak of this world and that world? See this world and that world mingling."
Rumi's Mingling, one of the more than 200 poems translated and edited by Omid Safi. The book is Radical Love, Teachings from the Islamic Mystical Tradition. How were these poets received in their time?
They were and they remain the most popular of Muslim voices. This is one of the points that really helps us reimagine what we've understood these societies to be. After the Quran, and second, only the Quran, it is actually the sensual poetry of Hafez and Rumi which have been bestsellers in Muslim tradition. These are the books that have been copied by hand most frequently, read, memorized, commented on. So in some ways, I'm not a fan of stereotyping, but if we're going to stereotype and generalize about what the Muslim tradition has been historically, it's a tradition around mystical, sensual love poetry. Right, and that's a stereotype that would be a refreshing change these days.
But it is. I mean, and this is the trouble with religions around the world, and every religion, fundamentalist Christians. You know, we have this problem there too, where separatism is the foundation of fundamentalist yeah. Christian ideology. It is precisely what Jesus did not teach, but right. That's okay with them. They have their interpretation, and they have a right to it. But there is fundamentalist Islam as well.
Absolutely.
That would draw us away from these kinds of ideas.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, I've done plenty of work in my life talking about contemporary Muslim issues and debates and tensions. But there's something about you get to the point in your life where you actually want to talk about the good and the beautiful. And I also think about the fact that, you know, I'm blessed by birth and by training and upbringing to have a life that's surrounded by these thousands of books of poetry and beautiful teachings. And I want to try to figure out, what do I want to leave behind? What do I want to pass on to my children? What's worth passing on to? And not all of it is.
You also tell a story in the book by Farid al-Din Attar about the idea of the opposite of love not being hate but fear.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and I think this notion that love has a few opposites and apathy can be one, indifference to others being one. And this is one of the consistent points of these mystics, that if you love God, you have to love God's children. That the proof of how much tenderness and love and faith and devotion somebody has is not what comes out of their mouth. It is how they treat people who at the moment find themselves weak and vulnerable. And I think one of the points in which there's the greatest unity between these love mystics and the best of the Christian teachings is that both of them agree that all that we mean by justice is love when it moves into the public square. And it's that same love that you have towards God and humanity that does not allow you to remain silent when you see people suffering. It says that this is the love that would make rocks cry out if they could. And I think we do live in an age in which a lot of people are searching for a model of being faithful, where you are one with God, and that same tenderness compels you to become deeply concerned about the fate of human beings, starting with those who are vulnerable at the moment.
And the trouble we have with that, particularly in the progressive world, is that it becomes a kind of a sequence, right? In other words, I've seen this thing out there that those people are doing to those other people. I will condemn the people who would put children in tents and then try to change things. But that's still creates the separation.
It's still us and them.
It's an us and them, right?
And I think that's one of the things that I've discovered from my own life of activism and public speaking is that so long as you're kind of pointing the finger at somebody and this is what you're doing wrong, naturally people get defensive and they retreat back into their corner and they respond to love. People can smell it. They know when it comes from your heart. And if you say, I love who we can be as a people, and I have a better dream and a better hope for all of us that includes you. Mm. And I want you to also be free of this practice. You're better than how you're living at this moment. I think people respond to that.
But the only true expression of that is through identity, right, and not through theology. So in other words, the idea of loving God, and you can read these intense ways, I love God. So people sit, you know, they fall to their knees and say, God, I love you. Look what you did. The flowers, they're so pretty, and the honey, how sweet, man, you are. I love you. God is still out there.
Yeah.
You see? And so what's wonderful about these poets is they use this language, but they're begging you not to make God outside of you and find the God within you.
You have to make God real inside you. There's a wonderful story in here by one of these less known sages named Khareghani. He tells a story of two brothers, but they have very different temperaments. One of them spends every night in worship and prayer towards God, and one of them stays up at night taking care of their sick mother. The brother who spends all night in worship has a dream of God saying, we have decided to admit you to heaven for the sake of your brother. And he's like, I'm sorry, God, you seem to have the wrong brother. I'm the one who is praying and worshiping you all night. And he hears the voice of God coming and saying, that which you did, I had no need of, but your mother needs you. But your mother needs you. And there's this notion that prayer is lovely, and we should all have a prayerful life, but serving of those who are in need and vulnerable, starting with those around us, sometimes in our families, in our communities, in our neighborhoods, and then expanding outward so no one is left out. This is this radical faith of the heart that we're talking about.
And as you said earlier, this is found in every tradition, and you made reference to the Christian tradition. A man walks up to Jesus and says, what is the most important law?
He says to
love the Lord thy God above all else and your neighbor as yourself. Yeah. If you assume Jesus can count, that sounded like two to me,
right?
But it was one to him. There is no loving God without loving your neighbor. So if you're on your knees all night, and then you can point to them and say they have to be excluded from our group, you, by definition, are not loving God.
That's right. And I think that's one of the beauties of studying these mystical teachings is that the deeper you go, the more you find their similarity and their resonance, as if they're all drinking from the same fountain.
And also there's a story in here about sort of the vengeful God, and I think an amusing and charming story about an encounter between...
Yes. So this is kind of when the relationship with God goes from being a Lord and Master relationship to a relationship between friends. And in fact, these mystics call God Dost, which means friend. So this is, again, a Khareghani story that he has a dream of night in which he hears the voice of God saying, Do you want me to go and expose you to people for the fraud that you are? Do you want me to tell them all the acts of hypocrisy, everything that is in your dirty little heart? And he talks right back to God and he says, my Lord, my friend, do you want me to tell people that you love them more than a mother loves her newborn baby? And if I do, no one will fast, no one will pray, because they know they have nothing to fear from you ever punishing any of them. And then there's a long, pregnant pause, and he hears the voice of God come back to him and says, you say nothing, I say nothing.
Right? Terrific story.
And again, this is not some story out of the 60s New Age movement. This is a 1,000-year-old Muslim tradition. This is the radical faith of people for the last 1,000 years. But we have to excavate it. We have to discover it. We have to unveil it. And we have to live this if we want a better future.
Why do you think, I mean, we can talk about this tradition in the Muslim tradition, but it is true in every other tradition that these teachings, which are ultimately so simple, you are love already.
Yes.
You have everything you need. Yes. Call off the search.
Yes.
That's the most simple teaching, and it's in every tradition. Why do we have to excavate that? Why does it always get buried and we have to go find it again?
Because to see how luminous we truly are is terrifying. It is overwhelming to know that we are the purpose of creation. We are the image of God. We are God's own light scattered across this cosmos. That our lives are not empty and purposeless. That we are the very reason that God manifests. And if we live in acknowledgement of that, how would it change the way we look at ourselves in the mirror? How would it change the way we look at one another? I think that's overwhelming. It is an awesome realization. So we do everything to distract ourselves and to make ourselves busy with all these nonsensical distractions.
We become human doings instead of human beings.
Human beings.
Would you read another one for us?
Yes, of course. So this is one called, I just opened it and this one came up. And
okay.
This is called A Treasure in Every Ruin on page 147. And I love these poems that are about ruin because, of course, life is not a linear path of success. Sometimes there's humbleness and brokenness, and there's a beauty in that too. So on page 147, mm-hmm. It says, deep in every ruin, there is a treasure buried. The buried treasure in the ruin of my heart is your love.
A treasure in every ruin, a ruin by Rumi, one of the poems translated by Omid Safi.
Oh.
Radical love. Tell us a little bit about the translations and working with in these languages and these kind of ancient traditions.
You know, there have been two sets of translations out there. There's a series of Orientalist Victorian translations that they said, we're not trying to create poetry in English. We're trying to do word-by-word translation with, in their words, no concession to readability. And of course, you read it and people are like, well, this isn't poetry. You keep telling me these are the greatest love poets the world has ever produced. And then on the other hand, you've got a series of what we call versions in English where they specifically try to remove all of the Islamic references.
Mm.
So all the Quran words, the teachings of Muhammad, they take out. And wherever it says God, they take out that and put it as like beloved. So it reads as sensual poetry, but not necessarily sacred sensual poetry. So what I tried to do in here was to go back to the original Arabic and Persian and to figure out which one of the poems would work in English. And how could I have something that, apart from the original, that in English it would read as fresh and original and bold and fierce? And that's kind of what we came up with.
Great stuff. Omid Safi is the director of the Duke Islamic Studies Center and a leading Muslim intellectual in our midst. His book is called Radical Love, Teachings from the Islamic Mystical Tradition. Always a pleasure, Omid. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you for having me on again.
We've got links to the book and his work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we talked to a historian who says it was the Civil War that made America great. Stay tuned.